Okay. I'd like to first thank my collaborators, Greer Gay at the American College of Surgeons and Alex Little at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. There we go. And I have no disclosures. Okay. The purpose of my study was to assess quality of care by comparing patterns of diagnosis and treatment for patients with early stage non-small cell lung cancer using data that was contained in the American College of Surgeons non-small cell lung cancer patient care evaluation study. This was a study from 2001, and we were comparing that with guidelines of the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And the hypothesis at looking at facility characteristics was that guideline adherence would be lowest for patients treated at community cancer centers, facilities with low lung case volume, and those that were high safety net burden. At the patient level, that guideline adherence would be lowest among patients that were Black, that were older, that were uninsured or Medicaid insured, had no documented comorbidities. I'm not saying no comorbidities, but no documented comorbidities, and those that resided in low median income areas. Okay, I'll give you a little background here. 75 to 80% of all new lung cancers are non-small cell and can be treated with curative intent if diagnosed at an early stage. The literature has shown that patient factors such as advanced age, lack of adequate insurance, low income, less than a high school education, and Black race have all been shown to result in delays in diagnosis and also advanced stage at diagnosis. Many of these same factors reduce the likelihood of a patient undergoing surgery for non-small cell lung cancer. At the facility level, we know that receiving treatment at low volume or safety net hospitals also reduces the likelihood of surgery for non-small cell lung cancer. Now, my interest was guideline adherence, but the problem is most registry databases or administrative data sets don't contain adequate data to really allow you to assess adherence to guidelines. What's usually missing is documentation of symptoms and also test results. And so what was nice about this particular study that was done by the American College of Surgeons was that the data set does permit such analyses. Okay, so the inclusion criteria, we included all adults, 18 and up, those who had or were assumed to have malignant tumors going into evaluation, and then those who eventually were determined to be non-small cell lung cancer in early stage. Okay, the way the guidelines work is that, and it was kind of hard to show it on a slide, but there are a series of decision points, and at each decision point there are two different directions that you take, and depending on the direction that you go, different things are supposed to happen to you. So at the very first kind of decision point, there's an additional inclusion criteria, and going forward from there is that all patients had to be negative on their chest CT for mediastinal nodes. Okay, and the only exclusion criteria for this study was whether they were missing on stage. So that was the only exclusion. All right, and so as I mentioned earlier, the data source is the patient care evaluation study from 2001. Now, the participation in this was solely voluntary, so 729 hospitals chose to participate. And the version of the guidelines we're comparing to is version from 2000. Now, the guidelines first came out in 1996, and they were updated over time, mainly due to changes in staging. Okay, so for the first step, where we were comparing adherence, we were looking at adherence during the initial evaluation. So here we were looking at whether patients received the needed history and physical, chem profile, chest radiography, or chest x-ray, chest CT, and the other item that we wanted to compare but couldn't was complete blood count. That was one thing that was not coded in the PCE data. The next step, we wanted to see whether they got bronchoscopy or mediastinoscopy. This was a little bit complicated, but at any rate, for stage one patients, if their tumor was peripherally located, then they should have received a bronchoscopy as well as mediastinoscopy, which was optional. If they were stage one with a centrally located tumor, or if they were at stage two, then they would have received both tests. Now, the problem with the PCE data, and this was one additional issue, was that we were unable to determine whether tumors were peripherally or centrally located. So we had to make an assumption going forward that if someone was stage one, if they got mediastinoscopy or not, that both had to be considered adhering to the guidelines. So that was one caveat we had to make. Okay. At the treatment end, basically if they were negative on the bronchoscopy and mediastinoscopy, they would move forward to surgical exploration, and then if the findings confirmed early stage, then the patient would go on to surgical resection. If they were positive on the mediastinoscopy and bronchoscopy, they would go on for a brain MRI and a bone scan, and if negative on both tests, they would have chemo plus or minus radiation therapy. Okay, so as you can tell, adherence is what we're interested in, but we're also looking at tests or treatments that were not recommended and yet received. Oops, too many. There we go. All right, the analyses are basic univariate comparisons to start off with as appropriate to the data. And then the modeling were generalized estimating equations, and we chose these so that we could control for clustering by facility, and this was used to predict the likelihood of surgery. Okay, of the 40,440 patients that were available to us, 11,266 met the inclusion criteria. So going back now to the initial evaluation, you can see that adherence rates were generally fairly high until you got to liver function tests. And you can tell pretty much people didn't buy into that. So when you combine all four tests, because all were required, you see that the rates dropped down to 44.7%. So you may ask, what can I tell you about patients with low inherit rates? What are their characteristics? So for those patients, what we see is they tended to be the patients that were living in areas with median incomes that were low. For some reason, west-south central region, I can't really explain that one. And also patients that had no documented comorbidities. So, you know, I'm guessing that these are patients that see a physician rarely, if maybe they've never seen one before. So, at any rate, the facility characteristics were that they were treated at low lung case volume facilities, medium and high safety net burden facilities. And when I say safety net burden, I'm talking about high percentages of uninsured and Medicaid patients seen at the facility. And also treated at community hospital comprehensive cancer programs and NCI designated comprehensive cancer program facilities, which may seem a little unusual. You would think adherence rates would be high at these facilities. This one we're not real sure about, but one supposition that I've gotten from physicians is that, you know, potentially, you know, residents aren't following guidelines, and maybe that's part of the problem, but then I would have thought that the teaching hospitals would have fallen in this grouping as well. Okay, what wasn't recommended was PET scanning, but you can see that 22% of people actually got it, and I've listed the characteristics here of those patients who got it, or who were less likely to get the test, pretty much similar to what you've seen for the earlier tests. The other thing that you see is that patients also, at least a few of them, got chest MRI, but it was a very small percent, 1.4%. And again, I've given the characteristics here of those of the patients who were less likely to receive that test. Okay, so now for the bronchoscopy and mediastinoscopy. So among the 8,789 patients whose mediastinal lymph nodes were negative on chest CT, pretreatment guideline compliance was low. If we use the less stringent criteria for the stage ones that I described earlier, where we had to say whether they got mediastinoscopy or not, they met guidelines, then we get 55%. If we use the stringent criteria and we say everybody had to have both irrespective, then it's 20.8% for mediastinoscopy. If we look at stage twos alone, 24.5% met the guideline for mediastinoscopy. For both modalities, 22.1%. All right, so the characteristics associated with low adherence rates, once again, here for mediastinoscopy, it's the older patients tended not to get these, those that are 75 and older. Patients that were other race, so this would be Asian, American Indian, and so forth. Females, Medicare insured, which matches the age result. Stage 1A tumors, again, the region affects, mountain region. And if they were treated at low volume, medium safety net burden, and NCI-designated comprehensive cancer facilities. Mediastinoscopy, there were some region effects, but that was all. Okay, not recommended, yet received, was fine needle aspiration biopsy. 50% of people got that test. And so what we did is we looked to see if it was being used as a substitute for mediastinoscopy. And so if you do that, you see that 43% of the people who got that were those that were not undergoing mediastinoscopy. People that were less likely to get this were the younger patients. They were uninsured or privately insured, lived in low median income areas or the Middle Atlantic region. Basically any TNM stage except for 1B, people with less than two documented comorbidities and then treated at a teaching or community hospital comprehensive cancer center. All right, and finally for the treatment. Among the 4,773 patients with definitive pretreatment evaluation results, so results from bronchoscopy and mediastinoscopy, 42% or 1,990 with negative results were surgical exploration candidates. And so what you see here is basically 60% underwent surgical exploration, thoracotomy or video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery. 83.2%, if we go by clinical stage, underwent surgical resection appropriately. If you go by pathologic stage, 82.8%. So roughly you get the same percentage, whether you're using clinical or path stage. Okay, those people less likely to get these procedures. So we'll start with exploration. Again, it's the older patients, the stage ones, the people without documented comorbidities, and those treated at low or near high case volume facilities, and those with medium safety net burden. All right, for resection, the older patients, not surprisingly, were less likely to get resection. The non-white, Medicare, which matches the age result, living in areas with high percentages of people without a high school diploma, areas with low median income, Midwest or South, and treated in regions or treated at facilities with low lung case volumes or community hospital type. All right. How are we doing on time?
You're okay.
Okay, all right. For bone scan and brain MRI, this is among the patients that were positive on bronchoscopy and mediastinoscopy. And so what you see is that bone scan, it's only about a third of patients actually got that. Brain MRI, about 8.3%. Both modalities combined, only 5.3%. So again, I went on to look at the idea of substitutes. Brain CT, though not recommended, was used by 27.2%. You know, you think about brain MRI, the MRI equipment itself being fairly expensive. So if I look at just bone scan plus brain CT, you see that combined percentage is 15.8. Or if we go on and say, did the patient have bone scan, and then either MRI or CT, the rates go up to 20%. Still not very high compliance rates, but yeah, it's very low. Okay, so I've given the characteristics here, again, of those that were less likely to undergo the bone scan or the brain MRI. There were no significant variations for brain MRI. But for bone scan, what you see, that the ones that were less likely were those that were non-black, the tumor stage 1A or 2A. Again, living in areas with a high percentage of patients that are not high school graduates, mountain or Pacific region, treated at NCI-designated comprehensive cancer centers or teaching hospitals, and treated at high and near high volume cancer facilities. All right, I think I'll skip over this in the essence of time. Okay, in terms of adjuvant therapy, okay, among the 1,497 patients that had negative margins, you see that the compliance for adjuvant therapy was really quite high. Here, compliance would be met if you were If you had no nodes positive, then you wouldn't undergo adjuvant therapy. Just observing you would be considered appropriate. So those patients would be considered compliant if they did not receive radiation therapy. Those that were nodes positive, radiation therapy was optional. So whether you got it or not, both were considered as having met the guideline. Those less likely to undergo adjuvant therapy were actually the patients younger than 60, those not Medicare insured, and the TNM clinical stage 2s. Taking it just one step further, looking at adjuvant therapy for the patients who were positive on pretreatment evaluation, but they were negative on testing for the distant mets, so they were negative on the bone scan and the brain MRIs and so forth. What you see is that little better than a third met the guidelines for chemotherapy plus or minus radiation therapy. Okay. Then we did some initial modeling. I'll try to go through this rather quickly. What we did is we went back to the full sample and we said, okay, irrespective of all the various cut points where you could have met or not met the guidelines, who actually got surgery and what were the predictors of surgery? And so what you see is those with log odds less than one, those all are showing you that they were less likely to undergo surgical resection. So you'll see that for the stage relative to stage 1A, any other stage made the patient less likely to undergo surgery. For age, these are all in comparison to those who are less than 49 years of age. And so basically being 60 years and up decreased your likelihood of getting surgery. A little bit more coming here. Okay, compared to those who are privately insured, you see that any of the other forms of insurance listed here decreased your likelihoods of surgery. Similarly, black race compared to white race decreased your likelihood. If you lived in an area where the percentage of patients or the percentage of residents without a high school diploma was near high compared to an area where the percentage was less than 14%, that decreased your likelihood. Income compared to people with high incomes, people with very low or medium incomes were less likely. And then comorbidities was kind of, 1 minute, okay, good. I can quickly wrap this up. For the comorbidities, it's kind of interesting because you don't see a what initially looks like a pattern. But I think more than likely those that had one comorbidity were really people where not all their comorbidities were documented, so they're probably more like the people that were listed as zero documented comorbidities. So if you start from two and work your way up, you'll see you have a decreasing trend there. All of them have an increasing likelihood, but the amount of that increase gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you'll see that those with five or six comorbidities are very similar. So at any rate. So there are the results for the facility type and so forth, and you can see these characteristics all increase your likelihood of surgery. So finally, in conclusion, basically what we can say is that disparities in guideline recommended care exist in staging and pretreatment evaluation as well as in surgical treatment and adjuvant therapy, and that's in the adherence. The expected patient facility level factors impacted adherence to guidelines. Dissemination and acceptance of guidelines is slow. Competing guidelines may be a factor. Also, patient refusal may be a factor in adherence. We have some limited data on patient refusal at the treatment level, but we don't have that same level of information for the actual tests that patient underwent. So basically, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there a question for you?
Okay.